From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. There is a great free online summit starting on Monday, 10th of June. The Kick Sugar Summit 2019 has the most incredible lineup of over 40 fantastic speakers. I won't list them all, but I'll just whet your appetite with the first two on the list, Robert Lustig and Gary Taubes. Okay then, how about Tim Noakes? Gary Fetke? The list goes on, and you can watch them all for free next week. If you miss the live streaming or just want to buy the digital downloads to keep, you can do that too. Get the link from my links page at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's chat went on for rather a long time and is one of those rambles all over the place a bit episodes. When we passed the hour and a half mark in recording, I decided to simply let it run and split the episode into two parts. As I didn't plan for it, there's no neat and tidy let's break it here and come back next week bit like I've done before, so sorry about that. The internet gods are against me at the moment and my bandwidth is painfully slow, so I apologise for the late release of this week's show. Being able to split one recording into two episodes has also helped on that score, so yay. I can't tell you how frustrating it is when your internet is so slow it becomes impossible to communicate properly with your interview guests. This has made me a bit reticent to contact anybody to interview except friends who are likely to be tolerant of glitchy connections. I guess rural France does have its drawbacks after all. Anyway, enough about my dodgy internet. This week's extraordinary woman is Jennifer Kleiman. Jennifer is 48. She lives with her 3 cats, 2 dogs, 9 chickens and 2 life partners about 10 minutes from the University of Georgia on a beautiful piece of land with a stream, waterfalls, a quiet forest, massive gardens and a hobby orchard they've planted with blueberries, figs, pawpaws and pecan trees. Wow, that sounds amazing, doesn't it? Jennifer has struggled with obesity her whole life, as has her family. Since starting keto in late 2015, she has lost 100 pounds and reversed her type 2 diabetes, got off all her drugs, her kidneys are back to normal, and she is healthier than ever. Her two life partners also went keto to support her. They've been a triad for almost 20 years. Her partner Gloria, who is a famous sex therapist, has lost 25 pounds, and her partner Will, who is a chef, he's lost 180 pounds. And that's just so far. He discovered a passion for keto cooking and specifically keto candy, so last year they started a healthy low-carb candy company called Moonsgrove Farms. Jennifer also helps Karen Ogilvy with the Keto Science Alliance family of Facebook groups. They are big groups, and Karen's doing a great job promoting a science-based, evidence-backed approach to keto that makes a ton of sense. Jennifer believes that there are healthy ways to enjoy food without triggering unhealthy eating habits or causing bad physical issues. She has struggled with food addiction and doesn't want to go back to that struggle, but she does want to enjoy life and a wide variety of food as much as possible without being unhealthy in any way, and share what she has found with others. You can find all the links to follow Jennifer and check out her yummy candy in this week's show notes. You will also find a 15% off voucher code so that you can try out some keto candy yumminess for yourself. What are you waiting for? Oh, wait, hold on. Listen to the show first, please. Welcome, Jennifer, to the Keto Woman podcast. How are you doing today?
Oh, my God, I'm so excited. Just happy to be here. I love talking with you, and I'm thrilled to be a guest.
And we've actually met a few times in person, so it's nice to see you again.
It's great to see you. I just wish I could give you a big hug.
Yes, we like hugs. Well, it won't be long because we'll both be at Keto Fest, won't we?
Yay! I'm so excited about that too.
I know, me too. It's not, well, I suppose it is a way away. We're it must be about 6 weeks away, but it's I know it's going to come around really quickly.
I'd say seven, not that I'm watching the clock, but much to do, lots to prepare.
And exciting for me to be in America again. It's become a bit of a regular thing for me these days. Having not been to America at all until last year was the first time ever set foot stateside. Yeah, it's becoming a bit regular now.
The first Keto Fest last year?
Yes, that was my first trip to the US of A.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm very happy that it was a good experience. And I was so psyched to meet you last year and then to be on your show this year. Oh, my God. Yay.
We've been talking about it for a while, haven't we? So it's nice to finally have you here sharing the web waves with me.
It's been quite a year, actually, almost a full year since then. Thinking about everything that's happened in my life and, you know, just the world in general. It's been crazy times.
Lots of changes. A lot has gone on in this year. So on that subject, tell me a bit about you.
I am 48 and I have two partners, and I've started a low-carb candy company, which I founded actually after Keto Fest last year. And I got I was passing out some samples of my partner's candy. He makes this candied citrus peels and orange rinds and ginger and stuff. And I was passing out samples last year to see what people thought. And everybody's like, oh, it's really good. So I started a candy company. And also, of course, I've been keto for quite some time, about 4.5 years now. I was type 2 diabetic back in 2014. I got my diagnosis and it was really bad. I had a 12.1 A1C and started to have kidney disease. My eyes were messed up, you know, all the complications. I spent like a year trying to find, you know, just trying different things, drugs, trying to eat a little better, but, you know, I didn't know. Finally, I had a big wake-up call that wasn't working. I hit the internet real hard, found keto, and it saved my life.
How did you find keto? Literally a Google search with your symptoms? How did you come across it?
Actually, I went on Reddit. I was a Redditor, and the diabetes subreddit there is not entirely friendly to keto. They're mainly type 1 diabetes oriented, and they're not strictly about keto. But from there, some people are like, you should try keto. And then the keto subreddit was all like, this is going to do it. You've got to do it. And they were right. In fact, I almost died. So I was very hesitant and fearful about trying keto because, you know, the fear that you read on the internet. So I went to my doctor at the time and I said, well, you know, you want me to keep increasing my dosage of these different medications? You want me to go on Lipitor? I'm taking Amaryl and Diglipizide. And you say diabetes is a progressive disease. I don't want to see it progress anymore. So I was thinking about trying this keto diet. And she's like, well, some people say it works, some people doesn't. I don't know. Yeah, if you try it, that's all right. So he didn't push it. He didn't say it was good. He didn't say it was bad. And so I went and I tried it, and I was on all those medications. What do you think happened? Well, the first day that I cut out all the carbs, and then the next morning I took the standard dosages of all those medications, I almost passed out. I think I did pass out briefly, and like when I could get to a blood sugar meter, I read 24. You know, I had chills, and I had to crawl. And I finally got to the phone and I talked to the doctor's office, and they're like, oh, yeah, that can be a complication. Just keep some candy on you. And, you know, if you start to feel queasy like that, just eat candy. It's a problem with the keto diet. Like, okay, I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is with the medication. And they're like, well, if you want to cut back, you could go back to like maybe, you know, a half dose and see how that goes. Like, how about a zero dose? So I fired that doctor.
I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? It's why people really need to get their doctors on board, and the doctors need to be on board in the first place, or at least open to it. Because this is a great illustration of what can happen if you are on medication. You know, it actually shows just how effective this change of diet is, that the medication ends up then having that such a dramatic response that it sends your blood sugar through the floor. You know, that's actually a good validation of keto, isn't it? However, it could lead to, well, potentially deadly consequences. So that's why it's so important to be able to work with your doctor. But to be able to do that, they have to have at least some kind of understanding, which, you know, it sounded like originally when you spoke to your doctor that they did, because they said, you know, they knew about it. They said keto can help. It helps for some. It doesn't help for others. So I think you would be justified in thinking that they were au fait with it and would have given you the guidance that you might need if you had needed to be aware that this might be a problem when you started, that the medication was going to bring your blood sugar right down. It would have been something that you could have looked out for and managed and all the rest of it. Crazy.
I thought I was doing all the right things by, you know, they said consult your doctor, you know, and I did.
Yeah.
And it turned out that he wasn't helpful at all, but I didn't know that. He sounded helpful. I feel like a lot of people accept their doctors as authorities. I used to. And they just, you know, whatever the doctor says, they trust them and they do that and they don't question. And that's how I used to be. And that ripped the scales from my eyes. And I found a doctor who views himself as my partner and my health coach. I mean, he's not, he is a MD, but when he says something, he expects, and I do, go research it and decide for myself, you know, if that makes sense, and take action on it, or propose an alternate course of action, which I've done. And then he's, you know, he'll research and he'll say whether he thinks that makes sense. So I'm not saying I have an MD or I'm an expert in stuff, but I'm an expert in my own health.
And I think that's how it should be. And I think that's more and more, that's what seems to come back from pretty well everyone I speak to, is this sense of empowerment and confidence that keto, low carb gives them. They get this understanding of how their body works, because even if they just read the most basic of the science that goes with it, it all starts to make sense how their body's working, and they get it and they start to understand why they had the problems they had and how easy it can be to fix it or at least help whatever the issues are that they have. And that gives you a real sense of confidence to be able to then go to your doctor. And like you say, you're not speaking to them as an equal. You're not saying you have the qualifications they do, but you're speaking to them on that kind of level where you're the expert of you and you're an intelligent person and you're willing to put in the work. And when you do find the right person, and my doctor's very similar, you get that kind of relationship where you work together rather than they're just, like you said before, they're just this authority figure that expects you to just do whatever they say.
The high priest of medicine. You walk in, exactly. He gives you three Hail Marys and sends you home with a prescription for Ritalin or whatever. My current doctor, I love him, and he's a good guy, and he loves me, you know, not in any sort of inappropriate way, but anyway. I've talked with him about keto and diabetes and, you know, continuous glucose monitors and fasting, all these health practices that have changed my life. And he promotes them to his other patients, but he says that I am one of the few patients that actually does it. And he feels like, you know, I've talked to him about how angry I am at the medical establishment for not effectively communicating to people that these practices are not just some sort of woo-woo alternative with, you know, no health implications, but these are very powerful. And that I feel like I might have wasted or suffered for years of my life that I didn't have to because I didn't know. And he said that as much as he has preached these practices to his other patients, very few of them actually adopt it.
Right, interesting.
So it's kind of wasted time. Most of them are just there for a pill anyway.
Yes, that's always going to be the problem, isn't it? That not everyone, I think you kind of have to be that certain kind of person, and it is the kind of person that we tend to find in the keto community. It's that they're sort of slightly rebellious, prepared to push back, interested in the science, interested in doing their own research, not bothered about going out there alone if needs be, putting themselves first and leading the way.
Another problem here in the US is the way that medical billing is done. My doctor does not get paid for time he spends giving nutritional coaching.
Right.
The insurance company will reimburse him for diagnostic codes, for prescribing, for performing procedures, and for a visit, he gets 5-minute reimbursement. And he spends longer than that, he's not getting paid by the insurance company. You know, he has to support the whole office with all the people that do the medical billing and the paperwork managing and appointments and stuff like that. So if he's wasting time talking to patients who aren't going to actually take his advice, that hurts his whole practice.
Yes, exactly. I remember Sean Baker talking about the problem that he had with the hospital that he worked for. And that was the same problem. He was wanting to give some, you know, nutritional advice and coaching and setting up a weekly sort of drop-in center type advice to give to patients who were coming in for these operations to try and, I guess, you know, the goal often was for them not to have the operation in the first place. And of course, the hospital, the finance department freaked out at this. And that's where everything started to go wrong for a time. It's sad, isn't it, that money basically is coming before health. And, you know, you talk about the system in America and it's different in the UK. But the frustration, I think, that a lot of us feel is that this way of eating could potentially save the health system. It could certainly save the NHS, which, you know, the probably the biggest amount of money that flows out is to deal with type 2 diabetes or the associated problems that come with that. You know, you start reversing all that, you suddenly freed up all this money to do all these other things. I mean, it just seems so obvious, yet no.
Completely obvious. And I'm living it and I'm trying to be an example and, you know, not horribly preachy to all my friends and family, but to inspire. But it still, it kills me that their doctors are not advocating for this, that they're, my whole family, has obesity genes and diabetes genes, and you can see it in action. Unfortunately, with my older relatives who are, you know, not all of them have diabetes, but a lot of them. And a lot of them are taking the approach that, you know, they can eat whatever they want and then just inject insulin to cover for it. Or, you know, take, you know, a handful of pills, good to go, right? And, you know, they have more pills and more complications. We know how that goes. But their doctor isn't pushing them, so I don't know if their doctor did push them. But they all say to me, oh, Jennifer, I admire what you're doing. It's inspirational. I wish I could do that. I'm like, you could. You could do that. Mm. You know, you say that, but you could.
It does seem nuts, doesn't it, when you've got, so on one hand, okay, you have this disease that's progressive, and there's this path that you can take with it. On the other hand, and the choice is yours, there's this different diet and lifestyle that you could adopt that could reverse your condition. It's your choice. Which one are you going to take? This one involves medication. Eat what you like, but it's going to be progressive, which means it's going to keep getting worse. You're going to have to keep taking more medication and so on and so forth. Or,
or
it's going to be a bit more work. It's going to be difficult to adjust to, but we can reverse it. Which one? It seems amazing that people still choose the progressive option.
It's incredible. And then when they talk about the things that they would have to give up, I'm like, but I know there are keto options that would do that thing for you. You know, you have pasta. Awesome. Let me introduce you to zoodles or shirataki or these oat fiber konjac noodles that I love. Or instead of using pasta, imagine you had your sauce and sausage on a bed of broccoli. Yum, right?
Right.
Okay. Rice? Try cauliflower rice. There's candy. I got a candy company. Mm-hmm. You don't have to miss candy. And they're like, well, maybe if I had your partner Will to cook for me. And I have to admit, having my partner Will to cook for me is pretty awesome. But now there's so many companies out there providing even prepackaged cauliflower pizza in the frozen pizza section or whatnot. You know, you don't have to cook it all from scratch. Although I don't think that's that hard. I don't do all my cooking either, so I might be kind of privileged there.
I do think it's something that it's a skill that is useful to have, but only basic cooking skills. Keeping it simple, I think, is the mainstay for everybody. Even people like me who like cooking and experimenting, for the most part, I keep it simple because it's just easier that way.
Any dinner that's a steak and a salad is good dinner for me.
Exactly. What's not to like? Let's go back a bit I'd be interested to find out what led you to that place where you had your wake-up call with the 12.1, was it, A1C? Mm. How did you get there? You've already mentioned that there's genetic history there.
If you saw a picture of my family, you would see me, my brother, my mom, my dad, everybody. We all have the same build. What we call in Yiddish a zaftig, if you know what that is.
No.
Puffy,
right,
to say the least. I believe that our genetic heritage, is... We're perfectly well suited to living in ghettos and surviving on nothing but cabbage and maybe a borscht for months at a time. I think we're all very well adapted to fasting, for instance, but we're not well adapted to living in plenty.
Right.
So all of us, I wouldn't say that we struggle with our weight because that would imply that we struggle. And for most of my life, I was perfectly happy being rotund, Rubenesque. I was jolly and really around 200, 220 pounds. I don't know what that is in your weird kilogram units, but larger than is healthy for me. And I was fine with that as long as I was healthy. And I would, you know, go to the doctor and have my, you know, lipids and, you know, he'd say, oh, you should lose weight. But it wasn't like I had any health problems. So I ignored him. I like food. But then I did start to have some problems with my vision, where my vision was not sharp as it should have been. And I went in for a checkup and he's like, oh, yeah. So your blood sugar is 320. I'm like, is that bad? Yeah. He's like, yeah, you have diabetes. I'm like, are you sure? He's like, yeah, I'm sure. Like, you don't need to retest? it'll need to retest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, so that began the, like I said, a year of trying to treat diabetes with drugs, and then just kept adding on and on and on. And then there was this one day where I had this series of unfortunate events. I was at an amusement park with my family, and there all of us were, you know, the climbing jeans all on parade. They had a new roller coaster, and I don't know if you've been to an amusement park here where they have the safety harnesses and the fancy rides and the, you know, cages and restraints and stuff, but you have to be of a certain body size in order to fit within these safety harnesses.
That's right. You have to. I can always remember, I'm not a fan of most of these rides, but I can remember that from as a child with things I wanted to go on. There's a minimum height requirement, isn't there? But then there's also a maximum size, I guess.
Well, the newer rides, because they're, you know, pushing the limits, and so they have like special elaborate harnesses with different straps and cushioning and stuff. So they actually have a test seat that you can try on to see if you'll fit
right
before you spend an hour waiting in line to go on the ride. And so we walk up to the newest ride, and it has, you know, your test seat. And my dad looks at it, and he doesn't even try. And my mom, no. My brother tries it, and he just barely makes it. And I try it, and I just barely make it. So we wait an hour to get on the ride, and I you know, get up there, and they, it took three of the park attendants to, force the harness closed over me and squish my fat into place. And that was so humiliating. And I could just see them kind of staring at me in contempt. I mean, I'm probably imagining some of it, but I don't think all of it. And, you know, the other people on the ride, you know, they had to wait for these people to shove the harness in place over my gut. Well, that was all pretty terrible.
Mm, I bet.
And I don't think I enjoyed the ride either.
Well, you're not very likely to after that start, are you? To be honest, it's not going to happen.
No, not at all. Oh, dear, it was terrible. And then afterwards, I had heard that my aunt, who suffers from diabetes, had an incident that morning where she lives alone, and she had fallen, and she was so, I don't know, she was also very obese at the time. She couldn't get up, and she had to call the paramedics to come, and took a squad of six young men to get her to her feet. And I'm like, wow, so that's, this is my genetics. This is my future. Mm. If I don't do something, I'm going to be living alone and calling 911 to help me get to my feet until I die an early death of complications of various diseases. So I had to do something. And wow, I'm so lucky I found keto because, you know, one of the things we've talked about now is that people need to not be their own doctor, but at least be responsible for their own health. But it's so hard because saying, I reject the authority of the doctor, that's a great first step. But then there are so many charlatans and so many different alternative health paths. And not to say that all of them are bad or all of them are good, but to be able to judge which is the right path, now that you're taking responsibility, now that I was taking responsibility for myself, it is not an easy thing to say, this is real, this works, and this is a bunch of, you know, woo-woo that has marketing cachet, and so it's popular because it has an emotional appeal or whatever, but it doesn't actually help. So I have a lot of scientific training. I was studying to be a PhD in mathematics and math education. And so I had, some training in reading research papers and evaluating both qualitative and quantitative research. So I was able to find a lot of research backing the keto diet, which helped me. But I can't imagine that the average person trying to decide what's the right health practice for them, they don't have those resources. They're probably just asking like their friends or going on the internet and Googling and finding all kinds of other answers, which may or may not actually help. So it's difficult.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because on one hand, especially with the recent dramatic rise in popularity of keto, there is so much out there on the internet and it's all completely free. That's one of the things I like about keto is that it is accessible to everyone for free. You know, I mean, it hasn't cost me anything to learn how to eat this way. And I know it can do, and I know there are, you know, multiple businesses are building up around it now and around the popularity of it. Businesses like yours that we're going to talk about in a minute that are, you know, selling products to eat. There are coaching programs like the one I endorse, Kim Howerton and Carrie Brown's program, which is fantastic. And there are all these things that you can pay money to learn about keto if you want to. But you can also access it all for free. And that's what I like about it. It is universally accessible for absolutely anyone, completely for free. But there's also the other side of that is there's so much information out there. It can be really confusing to figure out which is the best path for you.
You know, Daisy, I think we kind of live in a very happy bubble, actually, because I think I've met people who have approached keto from a less informed and less free point of view, but where they got introduced to keto through, for instance, Prove It marketers or through their chiropractor who has a bunch of products that, you know, various powders and MCT oils and exogenous ketones. From that approach, it's not more of a like a free diet, but them, you know, to this approach, it's more of a sort of a magical process of taking different potions that will make you better. And, you know, the marketing hype around these things is intense.
Yes, it's a very good point, actually. And I kind of had completely forgotten about that because it's so much something that I stay away from. Like, I forget what a big industry it is. And of course, it really does appeal to those people, that group of people that you were talking about before, where your doctor was saying that he wished all his patients who keto would work for would adopt it. But it is those kind of people who like to take a pill that are really susceptible to the exogenous ketone marketers.
It's one extreme or the other. You get the pill from your doctor. So you have the people that will not venture out from their doctor's protection, and they're just going to take the pill and they don't want to consider anything else because the doctor hasn't said to do it. And then there's the people who have thrown the shackles of the doctor off, but they are not scientific in their approach. So the first, the most bloviated marketing claims out there, they're like, well, this is amazing. And it says, and it has these endorsements by these beautiful looking people, and it costs a lot of money, so it's got to be good. And those people, you know, it's hard to kind of separate out the fact from the fiction when you have to start evaluating these health claims that they are that they've been caught in. I went to a conference for the Nourished Festival is for gluten-free products, which our candy is gluten-free. And while I was there, there were several other keto people at this conference, including the Prove It booth. And the Prove It marketers there were, you know, very enthusiastic about their product. And, you know, they sounded very sincere about it. And I hope that, you know, if they are listening, that they're not going to be offended. But their product is just completely unnecessary unless you happen to be maybe a high-performance athlete. I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, obviously, most high-performance athletes don't take exogenous ketones. So I don't think it's a necessary product even for them. But it's certainly not for people who are just trying to lose weight.
Well, in actual fact, it goes the other way. It can actually be counterproductive if you're trying to lose weight.
Oh, I was talking with someone actually literally yesterday about this. She said she was doing a little fast because she wanted to, you know, get her body back in a higher state of operation. And she was measuring her ketones, and she, you know, was 36 hours into the fast. And so she thought, so she said, I took some exogenous ketones to really boost my ketones and really get deeper into the fast. I'm like, okay, you just actually completely tanked your fast because your body was producing the ketones. And that means your body was taking its stored fat reserves and converting it to energy. And now you just took a whole shot of extra energy. And so your body's like, wow, well, I got extra energy. I don't need to produce any more ketones.
Exactly. You just fed me. Thanks. Fast over.
She's like, oh, actually, that makes a ton of sense. But the Privet people aren't going to say that. Sorry, Privet people. All right. Now they hate me. But it's just the mechanics of it. And, I understand the average consumer is not going to get deep into the science. And so they're just going to believe marketing claims.
That's right. And it is when you look at the science behind it and you start, I have a very logical brain and I have to understand how something works before I can buy into it. And when you start picking these claims apart is when you start realizing there's something dodgy going on. And it's not to say that there aren't potential really useful applications for exogenous ketones. I've recommended them to my uncle, for example, who has early onset Alzheimer's. Perfect candidate for exogenous ketones, in my opinion. And there are others, but if weight loss is your goal, stay away from them.
Here, here.
Save your money. Spend it on steak and bacon.
The interesting thing about like the marketing and health auras and sort of taking a emotional approach to health, I think it is the intuitive way that most of us intuitively operate. And some of us are more rational. I'm not saying rational is better, but because rational can get trapped too. You know, we can make things overcomplicated and we can get stuck trying to evaluate different courses of action and fail to take any action. So rational isn't always, you know, sometimes we have to rely on our feelings. But often our feelings, I think in a lot of times, will lead us to the flashy, over-marketed solutions that seem emotionally appealing, but are not the right ones.
Difficult balance to try and figure out. Tell me about, you obviously adopted this way of eating. And for some people, and I'm not sure how I would cope in that situation. I live on my own, so I can do what I want in my house and have what foods I like in the house and all the rest of it. I'm not sure if I could cope if I live with someone who was a carb eater. I'm not sure how I'd deal with that. I know people find a way. But you were quite lucky, I think. You managed to get your lot on board and they found their own benefits from it. Is that right?
Well, not right away.
Ah.
My partner, Will, did start cooking keto for me right away because he was very supportive and is very supportive. But my partner, Gloria, she, while being emotionally supportive, she loved her carbs. And it was actually a big sacrifice for Will to, he was cooking keto for me, but he was still having carbs himself. And he was going through a phase at the time where he was perfecting his artisan bread skills. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, I think he caused my diabetes. I'm sorry, Will. Will, you there? You caused my diabetes. He just would pull this perfectly amazing loaf of sourdough out of the oven and offer me a hot slice of this crusty, amazing smelling bread with butter. Oh, just thinking about it. I mean, there is no keto equivalent, unfortunately.
That's impossible to resist, isn't it? I do understand that. That's where I was saying, if I had that in front of me, I'm not sure how I'd cope.
And he was making these pretzels and bagels and, you know, he was just really getting into it. Fortunately, he stopped making those and he would still make like fried potatoes or whatnot for him and Gloria. But I could resist those under the threat of looming death. You know, death is a great motivator and avoiding death. Once it became apparent to me that eating carbs and, you know, paying attention to my blood sugar, it was very apparent, you know, that the even the supposed heart-healthy oatmeal that my first doctor had advocated would spike my blood sugar and there would be up in the 200, 300 range again. So
it's a very good way, actually, isn't it, of bringing things like that home. It's one of the reasons why I say that it is useful to get a meter just to
absolutely.
Do that, to test different foods, because I've done the same thing. I had the exact same result with oatmeal. I used to love the steel cut oats and
yes.
thought, you know, these are super healthy.
No,
and
not,
used to eat
really.
Them all the time. I can remember having a conversation with my sister who also used to like having oatmeal for breakfast. And she used to say, The thing is, you know, you have this thing that's supposed to be really good for you and it's supposed to be really filling, but I just tend to feel sleepy and then really hungry mid-morning exactly. after having it. And of course, you know, now we know exactly why that is. It's because of the massive spike and then slump in blood sugar. And I've been surprised by a number of foods, and butternut squash, I made some soup with it, and as soon as I tasted it, it tasted so sweet. So I thought, right, I'm gonna test my blood sugar response to this. And it went even higher than oatmeal.
Oh my. Yikes.
So that's where it's just really worth testing different things, especially if they're your favorite things. And then you have this black and white data, don't you, in front of you. You can't argue with that. You can't argue and potentially play down how you felt, which is really easy to do when it's balanced with something that you're really craving. You can really play down those other things. But when you've got that data, black and white in front of you, that's shown you exactly what happened to your blood sugar, and you combine that with how you feel, and then it makes it a little bit easier to balance those scales in the right direction, I think.
Absolutely. Having that feedback mechanism, a feedback loop, is the only way, I think, that people learn to change their behavior. You know, just somebody telling you, oh, you shouldn't do that. Well, okay, you know, probably they're right. I don't know. But being able to experiment and do something and see the results of that is so powerful. So I've been wearing a continuous glucose monitor, a Freestyle
Libre.
I'd love
to try out one of those, yeah.
Oh, yeah, here we go, right there.
Uh-huh.
For about a year and a half now, ever since they became available for type 2 diabetics.
Right.
Not that I take any drugs or anything. So my doctor's like, well, you know, if you want it, I'll prescribe it for you, because he's my health partner. But he's like, I don't know why you need it. You know, it's not going to tell you any information like, you know, you need drugs, because you don't. I'm like, it's going to tell me stuff. And it really has. It's fascinating to see how different foods react. And even though I've pretty much cured my insulin resistance at this point, and I have experimented by having a carb meal or a piece of chocolate made with real sugar or whatever, and I can see it spike and then I can see it go down again. And that makes me so happy to see, because, wow, you know, back when I was still fighting the insulin resistance, I would go up. And it would stay up.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Has anything surprised you? So you've obviously had this data for a long period of time. Have there been things in there that you would never have expected to either spike it high or maybe drop it low? And not even necessarily food. I know some people react to things like coffee, or have you seen maybe things like stress or sleep impacting it? I mean, that's where it must be so fascinating, just having that continuous, being able to monitor it all the time. You can see the results of so many different things.
It's really, it has provided a level of insight into my metabolism that I had, you know, zero insight or very tiny insight into before. One thing that I can say that is hugely important to understand is that when you're using a little blood glucose meter where you do the finger prick, you are getting one readout. One tiny piece of information. And compared to a continuous glucose monitor, it's like you're looking into a room, a dark room, completely dark room, and you flick the light switch for a second compared to just turning the light on.
Yeah. So much you can miss.
Huge. So when people say like, oh, I'm going to test my reaction to coffee and I'm going to take a readout before and a readout after. My experience with a continuous glucose monitor tells me that 100% those two readings are basically meaningless, because there's a natural fluctuation. There's other stuff going on depending on the time of day, your circadian rhythm, heat, stress, sleep, other foods you might have eaten in indeed like the past 12 or even 36 hours, and just your general state of health too. So depending on, you know, your body's general state, like I can see where my body is in a general, like kind of unstressed, very relaxed, healthy state for a couple weeks at a time. And then I can see my baseline blood glucose is in the 80s. But then I can absolutely see where maybe my sleep isn't as good because I've been traveling, or work stress is going on. And then my baseline glucose is going to be 90s or even up around 100, and my reaction to foods is different. No, somebody can't just do like, I'm going to see how I react to coffee and take two readings. That's not going to tell you anything. Or people say, I tested my reaction to this sweetener, allulose, or whatever it is. And I, you know, did this thing and I took two readings and now I know it spiked me 15 points. That's just noise. That's noise. For one thing, those little readers have a variation of 10 to 15 points anyway. Even if you took two readings in quick succession, using the same finger, even the same drop of blood, you'd get variation. And then to think that you're going to learn something.
Yeah, you can still learn something. I mean, I know whenever I test foods, I do the baseline before I start, and then I'll do three afterwards. I think I tend to do one at 30 minutes, one at 60, and one at 90 or 2 hours, I think I do. It's going to tell you something. It's going to show you that general trajectory. But yes, what I'm fascinated about is to see all those nuances and particularly the impact of things like stress and sleep, because everyone always looks directly at the food. It's a common thing, isn't it, when people are stalled, when they're having problems with losing weight. And it's always about the food. And they can be saying things like, well, I'm doing everything right and I don't understand why am I not losing weight or why have I gained weight this week? And it's only when you look at all the other things that really can have a dramatic effect.
Absolutely.
So it's interesting that you say that you have seen that. You have seen the impact that it has on your blood sugar so that we can then infer from that it's going to have an impact on, say, weight loss, if that was what you were tracking, from something like stress or lack of sleep.
I think so. I think... It's, you know, the causal chain based on all the science that I understand is, you know, you'll have generally raised cortisol levels and that increases your insulin resistance and your general insulin levels, which will lock the fat within your fat cells. So you'll feel less energetic overall and not burn as much energy and have less access to your fat stores and, you know, the whole cascade. So I think it is clear that stress and lack of sleep has a huge impact.
So is there anything that surprised you during the time you've been monitoring? Is there anything that you wouldn't have expected to impact the way it has that you've seen pop up on those charts?
One thing I would say is that if you are exposed to heat at all, don't take blood sugar readings and expect to get something meaningful because... like if you get in a hot bath or a sauna or something like that, your blood sugar is going to shoot up like... 50, for me anyway, 50, 60 points, and I'll be...
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And I think it's universal. I've read that everyone has this response, but nobody knows about it. So, you know, you go sunbathing or something like that, your body gets hot, it's going to release blood glucose, and then once you get cool again, drops right back. But to see the magnitude of these swings, you wouldn't expect it. Also, exercise. Exercise is very, very interesting. If you just think like, well, I'm going to exercise and so my muscles are going to burn glucose and my glucose is going to drop. Yeah, not really. Yes, in a total energy sense, because you obviously are burning energy and so the energy has to come from somewhere. But your body also responds to stress by releasing glycogen so your muscles have more energy to burn. And it's always a moving target. So your body's going to release, depending on the stimuli you give it, like a really intense lifting session. Yeah, I go out there and I'm, you know, really giving it my all. My body's going to respond by releasing a ton of glycogen into blood glucose. So I have that energy because it's like, well, you're doing something seriously intense. I'm going to give you a ton of energy. So you'll actually see on the CGM a spike. And then because generally lifting is not a sustained exercise, then, you know, maybe you don't burn that right off. So it you see the spike and it's... not exactly a crash right away, but a sustained exercise that is intense. Like sometimes I'll hit the treadmill as hard as I can, and then I kind of oscillate. So like I'm releasing, burning, and these swings are pretty large until you see it. And I think once everybody has CGMs accessible to them, like as part of the Apple Watch or Fitbit or something like that, I think people are going to be responding to these by, you know, maybe structuring their workout so that they, you know, that you can have a glycogen workout where your aim is to exhaust your glycogen. Or maybe you don't want to exhaust your glycogen because you're prepping for a race the next day or something like that. But you'll be able to finely tune what you're doing with your body and, you know, see
how your body's responding to the stress.
Wow, that's fascinating. It makes me want to try. I'd be looking at it. I'd be like testing everything I did, seeing what impact it had.
Definitely.
Oh, yes. That spike was such and such.
I also wear a Oura ring. So I can measure how my sleep, it gives you sleep scores and stress level scores and stuff like that. So I can also see and correlate. And it absolutely does correlate with what I see on the CGM in terms of like general stress levels.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Another thing I'd like to see, but then I'd also probably be a little bit dismayed by the results when it said my sleep was my sleep was less than perfect.
Well, it gives you the tools to measure, you know, how your sleep is, and then, you know, if you try different things to experiment to improve your sleep.
That's true, actually. That goes back exactly to what we were saying before. It's hard to deny what's going on if you've got the data in front of you.
Exactly. It's important to measure. Measure and then respond.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share, and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman podcast Instagram and Facebook pages, and Daisy_ketowoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Dr. Zeus via Katie Breelove. Thanks, Katie, for the suggestion. Be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter and those who matter don't mind. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.